My name is Alma. I know what kind of awful food they feed you up at the Magisterium. Just stop in for a visit and then you'll be on your way. Aaron? Cole said. We're kind of in a hurry. Aaron looked helpless. He clearly didn't want to be rude. Social pressure was apparently his kryptonite. Master Lemuel looked more annoyed than pleased, so probably that meant it wasn't some kind of trap. With a sigh and a speaking look between himself and Tamara, he followed Alma and Aaron down a gentle sloped incline toward one of the houses with a small porch and blue-painted stars on the door. Inside, Cole could see a little kitchen with long wooden shelves lined with hand-labeled bottles. A wood-burning stove smoked in the corner, a hammock swung in another, and a quaintly painted table with chairs was in the center of the room. The woman opened a cabinet, which was full of misting ice. She stuck her hand inside and came out with a pitcher of slushy lemonade, the glass cloudy with cold, and several slices of lemon floating inside. She placed a few mismatched glasses and started to fill them. Aaron snatched one, guzzled it down, then winced in pain. "Brain freeze," he explained. Cole thought uncomfortably about gingerbread houses and old ladies and didn't take a drink. He didn't trust Master Lemuel, and he definitely didn't trust anyone who could put up with Master Lemuel either. He did, however, sit down on one of the chairs and rub his leg. He couldn't remember anything bad about sitting in fairy tales.
"So, this place," Tamara asked. "What is it?"
"Ah, yes," said the woman. "Did you see the sign above our great house?"
"Thoughts are free and subject to no rule," repeated Tamara.
The woman nodded. Master Lemuel had followed them to the house. "Alma, I know these children. They're not just trouble. They're the epicenter of trouble. Don't tell them anything you'll regret."
She waved vaguely at him and then turned back to the kids. She pointed at Havoc, who whined a little, and moved behind Cole's chair.
"We study the chaos ridden. I see you have a wolf with you.
A young one.
The enemy put chaos into both humans and animals, but while the chaos seemed to rob people of speech and intelligence, animals reacted differently. They continued to breed, so that the chaos-ridden creatures of today never knew the commands of a macaw, because there wasn't one. Until now."
She looked at Aaron.
"Havoc responds to Call, not me," said Aaron. "And Call isn't a macaw."
"That's very interesting to us,"
Alma replied.
"How did you find Havoc, Call?"
"He was out in the snow," Call said, brushing the back of his fingers against Havoc's ruff. "I saved his life."
Tamara gave him an incredulous look, as though she thought that Havoc would have been fine without him.
"Havoc was born chaos-ridden," said Alma. "There are no humans like that. Humans can't have chaos put into them. The human chaos-ridden are made from the freshly dead."
Aaron shuddered.
"That sounds gruesome, like zombies."
"It is gruesome, in a way,"
said Alma.
"There is an old alchemical saying. Every poison is also a cure. It only depends on the dose. The enemy managed to cure death, but the cure was worse than the original condition."
"Master Milagros says that," said Jasper, narrowing his eyes. "Were you a teacher at the Magisterium?"
"I was," said Alma, "at the same time that Master Joseph was there, experimenting with void magic. So were many of us. I helped with some of his experiments."
Tamara tipped over her lemonade glass.
"You stood by as Constantine pushed chaos into people, into animals? Why would you do that?"
"The order of disorder," Call whispered. "They had to be part of it."
In the book, it had said they'd turned to researching chaos-ridden animals. Where else would they find chaos-ridden animals than in the woods around the Magisterium?
They were the creators of the Alcahest.
Alma smiled at him. I see you've heard of us.
Haven't you ever asked yourself what Master Joseph and Constantine Madden were trying to do?
They were trying to make it so no one ever had to die, said Call.
Everyone looked at him oddly.
Way to pay attention in class,
Aaron said under his breath.
We are all beings of energy, said Lemuel. When our energy is expended, our lives end. Chaos is a source of endless energy. If chaos could be placed safely inside a person, he or she could feed off that energy forever. He or she would never die.
But it can't be, said Aaron. Placed safely inside a person, I mean.
That's what we're still trying to determine, said Alma. We're working with animals, because animals seem to react to chaos differently. Your wolf has chaos inside him. He was born with it inside of him. But he still has a personality. He has feelings, doesn't he? He's as alive as you are.
Well, yeah, Call said. And he is absolutely, definitely not ever going to snap and eat our faces, Jasper interjected. Right?
Who can say?
Offered Master Lemuel. He certainly appeared to be happier here than he had been as a teacher at the Magisterium, Call thought. Half of his mouth was turning up as though he might actually smile. Jasper slid down in his chair.
Crud.
Tamara glanced around.
So, if you're studying chaos-ridden animals, do you catch them? Do you keep them in cages?
Alma smiled and eyed Havoc in a way that Call didn't like.
So tell me about your mission.
What's your assignment?
I thought you said you didn't care where we were going, Aaron said to Master Lemuel.
I don't. I didn't say nobody would care.
Lemuel's half-smile turned into a full, malicious one.
It's not easy to run away from the Magisterium.
Drew sure found that out, muttered Jasper.
Master Lemuel flushed.
Drew wasn't really trying to run away. Everything he said about me was a lie.
Look, we know that, Aaron said, raising his hands in a gesture for peace. And we are on a mission, just not one that everyone at school knows about. So if you could tell us the fastest way to the road...
There was a commotion outside.
A middle-aged man with a bald head and big, bristly beard rushed into the room.
Alma, Lemuel! The masters from the Magisterium are coming this way. It's a search party.
Lemuel looked smugly at Call and the others.
Not running away, huh?
Just for the record, said Jasper, these people kidnapped me and are forcing me to go with them on a stupid mission to...
Tamara opened her hand. Jasper stopped speaking abruptly and started gasping for air. Tamara had apparently snatched the words from his mouth, quite literally, and taken the air he was breathing along with them. The adults hadn't seemed to notice, but Call was impressed.
Stall, Andreas,
said Alma calmly. The bearded man rushed off in the direction he'd come. Call leaped to his feet, heart in his throat.
We have to get out of here, he said.
Aaron scrambled up after him, and so did Tamara. Only Jasper remained seated, still breathing hard and glaring at the others.
We'll hide in the woods, said Aaron. Please, just let us go, and we'll never mention this place.
I can do better than that,
Alma said.
We'll hide you. But you have to do something for us in return.
Her gaze went to Havoc.
No way, said Tamara, moving to put her hand on the wolf's side. We're not letting you do whatever it is you're...
Do you promise he won't get hurt? Call asked quickly, interrupting her. He didn't like to consider it, thinking of how his father had chained up Havoc, but he saw the covetous way Alma was looking at his wolf. He needed to agree so he could stall for time until he found a way to get them all out of there, including his wolf.
Call, you can't!
Tamara protested, her fingers in Havoc's fur.
Of course he can, said Jasper. You think he's going to be loyal to anyone or anything?
Let's just go back to the Magisterium.
Shut up, said Aaron.
Call, are you sure?
But Alma laughed.
You misunderstand.
It's not Havoc we want, although he's very interesting. It's Aaron.
Well, you definitely can't have Aaron, Tamara said.
Without a Makar, we have so many theories, but no way to test them. We know you can't stay right now, Aaron, but make me a promise that you'll come back. And leave that wolf as collateral. When you return, all we need is a few hours of your time, and maybe when you see what you could do, how helpful to the world you could be as something other than a defense against an enemy with whom we're no longer at war, then, maybe, you'll decide to join us.
None of them spoke.
The wolf will be fine, Alma said.
Okay,
Aaron said after a long moment. I'll promise to come back, but you can't keep Havoc. You don't need collateral. You have my word.
We trust you, Makar, but not that much.
Quickly, children, decide. We can hide you or we can turn you over to the mages, but you must know they'll trade Havoc to us in exchange for the four of you.
Call didn't doubt that, not at this point.
Fine, same deal as before, but no experiments on him.
Alma looked well satisfied.
Good. Agreed.
All of you follow me. She led them out the back door of the cottage. They hustled across the green space between the buildings.
Call felt horribly exposed. He could see shadows moving through the trees, circling the clearing, and hear raised voices. The masters shouting their names.
Hurrying after Tamara, he saw she had one hand clasped around Jasper's wrist, keeping him from running in the opposite direction.
Call thought he heard Master Rufus's voice. He grabbed Havoc's collar and pulled him along faster. The wolf looked up at him as though he suspected something bad was about to happen.
If they ran into the woods, they'd be caught. Their only choice was to follow Alma, who was totally scary, who had once worked with Constantine Madden and Master Joseph, who wanted to experiment on Havoc, who probably qualified to have a pretty long evil overlord list of her own, and hope that she'd make good on her promise to hide them. With a sigh, Call kept on going. Alma took a keyring with several keys out of a pocket of her saffron dress and unlocked the door to the central building. Immediately they were startled by the sounds of barking and keening and crying. The building they went into was lined on all sides with cages of various sizes, and in them were chaos-ridden animals, from brown bears with wild, swirling eyes to gray foxes to a single bobcat that roared as Call came into the room.
This is the worst zoo ever, Jasper said.
Tamara's hand came up to cover her mouth.
So this is where you keep them.
Alma guided Call over to one of the cages.
Get your wolf inside, quickly. I need to get you settled and then go deal with the mages.
How do we know you're as good as your word?
Asked Aaron, apparently pushed beyond the fear of offending.
Makar, look at the creatures we have here, she said. They were dangerous to obtain. They are dangerous to keep. But you are more dangerous than any of them. We wouldn't cross you lightly. We need your help.
Outside, voices got louder. Master Lemuel was arguing with another mage. Taking a deep breath, Call put Havoc in the cage and let Alma lock it. She took the key and tucked it into her pocket, then led them to another room. It was windowless and full of boxes.
Stay in here until I come back for you.
It won't be long,
said Alma before she shut the door. They heard the lock turn, and then her footsteps receding. Tamara whirled on Call and Aaron.
How could you agree to letting them take Havoc? He's our wolf.
He's my wolf,
Call pointed out.
Not anymore, Jasper said, examining his fingernails.
And you, Tamara said to Aaron, agreeing to some stupid deal. Both of you were idiots.
Call threw up his hands.
What else were we supposed to do? We needed them to hide us. And now they have. If we break out, and get Havoc out too, while they're talking to the Masters, we can sneak away without anyone knowing, and then Aaron doesn't have to come back.
Aaron opened his mouth to say something, but Call cut him off.
Don't say anything about keeping your promise. That wasn't a real promise.
Fine, Aaron said. It's not going to be easy to break out your wolf. There's probably a magical lock on those cages, Jasper said.
He's right, said Tamara. I have a plan, said Call, peering out through the keyhole in the door. Aaron, can you get this door open?
If you are asking if I know how to pick locks, Aaron said, I don't.
Yeah, but you're a Makar, said Call.
Through the keyhole he could see the stuffy room full of cages, and Havoc curled up, looking miserable.
Makar it open or something.
Aaron looked at him as if he was talking nonsense. Then he spun around and kicked the door. It burst open, the hinges tearing.
Or you could do that, Call said. That works too.
Jasper's body tensed, like he was thinking about making a break for it. Tamara turned toward him.
Please don't leave. Just stay with us, okay? For a little while longer. I know this isn't fun, but it really is important.
Jasper looked at her, an odd expression on his face, as though she'd managed to say the one thing that could convince him not to run out of there and tell on them. Weirdly, that thing appeared to be please.
Well, you're right about it not being fun, he said, leaning against the wall and crossing his arms over his chest.
Call went to the cages. As Jasper had predicted, the locks were inscribed with several interleaving circles of alchemical symbols he didn't recognize, and three keyholes.
Tamara, what does this mean? He asked.
She peered over his shoulder and squinted.
It's warded against magic.
Oh, he said. Back home during the May Day parade, he had liberated a naked mole rat and white mice. Without magic, just ingenuity. After Aaron kicked open the door and got them into the main room, Call felt like he had to be the one to get the cages open, somehow. He grabbed hold of the bars, squinched up his eyes, and pulled as hard as he could.
That's your plan? Jasper said, bursting out laughing. Are you kidding me?
We need a key, Aaron said. A small smile tugging at the corner of his mouth. Or, well, a lot of keys. One of the bears roared, sticking a paw through the bars of the cage and batting at the air. Its eyes were orange and burning, coruscating with chaos. Aaron looked at it with his mouth open.
I've never seen one of those before.
Call wasn't sure if he meant a bear, or a chaos-ridden bear, which he was willing to bet none of them had ever seen before.
I have an idea, Tamara said, with a quick, worried glance in the bear's direction. We can't use magic on the locks, but...
Call whirled to look at her.
What? Give me something metal. Anything.
Call lifted a brass astrolabe off one of the desks and held it out to her. In her hands, it started to melt.
No. The more Call stared, the more he realized that the liquefying metal was floating above her hands.
It formed into a red-hot, roiling blob, blackening as it cooled in the open air and drifted toward the cage holding Havoc. When it got there, three tendrils of liquid metal snaked out into the keyholes.
Send cold water at it, Tamara said, her whole body straining with concentration.
Call pulled water from the animal's dishes, forming it into a ball and using air magic to cool it.
Quicker, she said, gritting her teeth.
He sent the water at what was left of the astrolabe. The metal hissed, and the water evaporated into a cloud. Call jumped back, falling awkwardly against one of the cages. When the cloud cleared, Tamara was holding a three-part key. Havoc whimpered. Tamara pressed the key into the lock and twisted it. There were three distinct clicks. One, two, and then a third that echoed all around the room. The cage popped open, and Havoc bounded out, sending the door swinging. Then, more clicks rang out, as all the cage doors popped open.
"Maybe we shouldn't have unlocked all three locks," Call said into the unnerving silence that followed.
As the animals burst free from their cages, Jasper started yelling. The bear heaved its way up and out. Foxes, dogs, wolves, and stoats all poured out of their prisons.
"Go!"
Call shouted at them. "Go and attack! I mean, go and distract the masters. Lead them away from here."
"Yes, distract," Tamara put in. "Distract!"
The chaos-ridden animals rushed toward the door, barely paying attention to either of them. Aaron yanked the door open just in time for them to thunder through. There were shouts from outside, as well as growls and squawks. Call could hear people running and yelling. Havoc danced up to Call, licking him vigorously. Call bent down to hug him.
"Good wolf," he muttered. "Good wolf."
Havoc nuzzled up against him, his eyes glowing yellow.
"Get down!"
Tamara yelled and reached up to yank at Jasper, who had climbed onto the desk and was trying to push open the window.
"I'm trying to help," he protested.
Aaron leaned out the open door.
"What if some of the chaos-ridden attack one of the mages? What if someone gets hurt? Not all animals are like Havoc." "Don't worry about the masters," Call said. "Those animals didn't look in great shape. I bet most of them run for the forest the first chance they get."
"Like we should be doing,"
Tamara reminded him, heading for the door and pushing past Aaron.
"Let's get out of here."
Keeping his head down and the fingers of one of his hands buried in Havoc's ruff, Call followed her. Aaron brought up the rear, keeping Jasper in front of him. They emerged into a clearing and froze. The small outpost was completely overrun. Masters were running back and forth, trying to capture the chaos-ridden animals fleeing in every direction. Jets of fire and ice were shooting through the air. Call was pretty sure he saw Master Rockmaple being chased around a tree by a chaos-ridden golden retriever. Master North whirled, a gleaming ball of fire beginning to rise from the palm of his hand. Alma suddenly lunged out of the small wooden house where she had given them lemonade. A whirlwind of air was whipping around her. She threw out her hand, and a tendril of air shot free and knocked Master North off his feet. His bolt of fire went wide, catching the leaves and branches of the tree over his head. It started to burn as Tamara took firm hold of Call by the collar and hauled him out of the clearing into the woods. They were all running, Tamara, Aaron, Jasper, even Call, limping a little but gaining a pretty good speed. Just as the sounds of the fighting behind them died down, Call heard a voice.
"I told Alma you were troublemakers," said Master Lemuel, standing ominously in their path. "She wouldn't listen."
Aaron stopped short, and the others nearly crashed into him. Master Lemuel raised his eyebrows.
"I'm going to tell you one thing," he said. "And you can believe me or not, but I dislike the masters of the Magisterium more than I dislike you. And I don't want them to get what they want. Understand?"
They nodded in unison. He pointed toward a narrow brook that ran through the trees. It was actually very pretty here, Call thought, which might have been something he would have appreciated under other circumstances.
"Follow that to the highway," Lemuel said. "It's the fastest way. From there, you're on your own."
There was a silence. Then Aaron said, "Thanks.
Of course Aaron would say thanks, Call thought, as they hurried toward the brook. If someone were hitting Aaron over the head, he would thank them for stopping. They made their way along the brook for half an hour in silence before Jasper spoke up.
So what's your plan now? It's not like we're safe once we hit the highway, Jasper said. There's no buses, and we don't have a car.
I have a plan, Tamara said.
Call turned toward her. You do?
I always have a plan, she said, raising her eyebrows. Sometimes even a scheme. You should take lessons from me.
This better be a really good plan, Aaron said, smirking, because you sure are talking it up.
Tamara pulled her phone out of her bag, checked it, and then kept walking. Chapter 10. The first sight of the highway made Cole shudder as he remembered the last time he'd crossed it, looking for Aaron. He recalled vividly the pain in his legs as he forced himself to hurry, the panic at the thought of Aaron in danger, and then the discovery that he wasn't the person he'd always thought himself to be. Jasper squatted and petted Havoc's head when the wolf came up to him. For a moment, he didn't seem like such a jerk. Then he saw Call looking and glared. Call sat down on the ground, watching the occasional car whir by. Tamara was typing things into her phone. He wasn't sure if she was researching stuff for their quest or just emailing friends from home. Aaron frowned thoughtfully into the middle distance, the way heroes in comic books did. They could make a figurine of him looking like that. Call wondered how Aaron would look when he found out that Call had lied to him a lot. He was still wondering about that when the sleek, black town car pulled up. The window rolled down and Tamara's butler, Stebbins, pushed back his sunglasses to show his pale blue eyes.
Get in, he said. We've got to make this quick.
Jasper scrambled into the back seat. Oh, sweet hydration. He grabbed a water bottle from one of the cup holders and guzzled the whole thing.
That dog's not coming in here, Stebbins said. He'll track dirt all over the seats and his nails could scratch up the leather.
They're not your seats, Tamara reminded him, patting the cushion next to her.
The wolf hopped into the car and then turned around, looking dubious. Call got in next, pulling Havoc onto his lap. It was hard to believe that the wolf had once fit underneath his shirt. Now he was almost as big as Call himself. Aaron got into the front.
I assume this will be our usual deal,
Stebbins said to Tamara, turning in his seat.
What's the address?
Call told him, although he didn't know the number, just the road. Stebbins punched the location into his apparently non-magical GPS. Then they were off.
What's the usual deal?
Jasper asked Tamara under his breath.
Stebbins drag races with my parents' cars, she told him, keeping her voice low. I cover for him.
Really?
Jasper asked, frowning at the guy in the front seat with what appeared to be new respect. As they drove on, Call found himself dozing against the window until his head started knocking against the glass. They were heading down a dirt road. He blinked. He knew exactly where they were.
Just pull up here, he said.
Stebbins stopped the car, squinting.
Here?
He asked, but Call was already opening the door. Havoc immediately ran around in circles, clearly relieved to be free. The kids got out and Stebbins put the town car in reverse, probably glad to be rid of them.
Are you kidding me?
Jasper said when they saw the landscape of cars.
This is a junkyard.
Call glared, but Tamara shrugged.
He is kind of right, Call.
Call tried to see the familiar area through her eyes. It was pretty bad. It looked like a parking lot, except that the vehicles weren't in tidy lines. Cars were haphazardly grouped together.
Some had been driven in, but most had been towed and dumped wherever they fit. Rust bloomed along their hoods and along their sides, pocking the once shiny chrome trim. Long grass had grown up around them, a telltale sign of how long they'd been abandoned.
"He keeps most of these for parts," Call said, feeling uncomfortable.
He'd always thought of his dad as eccentric, but he had to admit that having a lot of corroding vehicles seemed a little bit worse than eccentric. Alistair could never use all the cars he'd collected, not even for parts, since so many had rusted through, but he'd kept on collecting them anyway.
"The good cars, the ones he's planning on restoring, are in the barn."
Tamara, Aaron, and even Jasper looked hopefully in the direction Call was pointing, but the ominous gray building didn't seem to give any of them any comfort. A cold wind cut across the parking lot. Jasper shivered ostentatiously and hunched down into his jacket. He made a big show of rubbing his hands together as if they were climbing Everest, and he was afraid of frostbite.
"Shut up, Jasper," said Call.
"I didn't say anything," Jasper protested. Aaron waved a peacemaking hand.
"You really think your dad might be hiding out here?"
"It's not a place most people would look for him," Call said, no longer sure of anything.
"That's for certain," Tamara said, putting a depth of feeling into those words.
She looked over at the farmhouse near the tree line, a gray clapboard building with a tilting, patched roof.
"I can't believe someone lets him do this to their property."
"She's old," Call said. "It's not like her house is in great shape either, and he pays rent."
"Do you think he might stay in there?"
Aaron asked, hopefully. The yellow glow of the windows seemed inviting.
"I mean, maybe she let him crash in her spare room."
Call shook his head.
"No. When he comes here, he always stays in the loft of the barn. He keeps bedrolls up there and a camp stove. Cans of food, too. Maybe she would have seen him, though. He usually stops by."
"Let's go ask," Aaron said. "Is she one of those old ladies who bakes a lot?"
"No,"
Call said. He couldn't remember Mrs. Tisdale ever cooking anything. Aaron looked disappointed. Jasper just kept looking angry and staring up at the sky as if hoping to be saved by a helicopter or an air elemental or maybe an elemental driving a helicopter.
"Come on,"
Call said, setting off toward the house. His leg wasn't just aching anymore, it felt like spikes of fire were shooting up through the bones. He clenched his teeth as he made his way up the front steps. He didn't want to make a sound of pain in front of Jasper, not one. Aaron reached around him and knocked on the door. There were shuffling footsteps, and the door opened a crack, revealing tangled gray hair and a pair of bright, pale green eyes.
"Kind of short to be a door-to-door salesman, aren't you?"
cackled an old woman's voice.
"Mrs. Tisdale?" said Call. "It's me, Colum Hunt. I'm looking for my dad. Is he here?"
The door opened wider. Mrs. Tisdale was wearing a checked dress, old boots, and a gray shawl.
"Why would he be here?" she demanded. "Think I decided to sell him for parts?"
As soon as she came into view, Havoc began to bark like mad. He barked like he wanted to rip Mrs. Tisdale's arm right off.
"He hasn't been home in days," Call said, catching hold of Havoc's collar and trying to pretend the wolf wasn't slavering a little.
"I thought maybe."
"And the mages haven't been able to find him," said Tamara. "They've been looking."
They all turned to her in shock.
"Tamara?"
Aaron said. Tamara shrugged.
"What? She's a magician. You can see it on her. You can smell the magic in this house."
"She's right," said Jasper.
"Quit sucking up, Jasper," warned Call.
"I'm not sucking up, you're just stupid," Jasper replied. "And that pet of yours is a monster." Mrs. Tisdale looked from Havoc to Tamara to Call.
"I suppose you all better come inside."
"All but the wolf."
Call turned toward Havoc.
"What's wrong with you?"
The wolf whimpered, but then caught sight of Mrs. Tisdale and began growling again.
"Okay,"
Cole said finally, pointing to a spot on the lawn.
"Stay here and wait for us."
Havoc sat, grudgingly, still growling. They shuffled into the house, which smelled like dust and cat, but not unpleasantly to Cole. As much as it pained him that Jasper might have a point, it was good to be warm. She led them into the kitchen where she put a kettle on the stove.
"Now, tell me why I shouldn't contact the Magisterium and tell them to come pick up some truant students."
Cole wasn't sure what to say.
Because my dad wouldn't want you to?
And because we're on a mission, Tamara said, although this time it didn't sound as convincing.
A mission? To find Alistair?
Mrs. Tisdale took out 5 mugs from her cupboard.
"He's in danger,"
Aaron said.
"You left the mages, didn't you?"
Jasper asked, "like Cole's dad."
"None of that matters."
Mrs. Tisdale turned to Cole.
"Your father's in some kind of trouble?"
Cole nodded vehemently.
"We really need to find him. If there's anything you know..."
He could see the moment she relented.
"He came by last week. Stayed a few days out in the barn. Paid up a couple of months in advance, too, which isn't like him. But I really don't know where he is now. And I don't like the idea of you 4 kids being out here by yourselves."
She gave Jasper a sharp look.
"I might have left the mages, but that doesn't mean I'm too proud to call the Magisterium."
"How about we stay over in the barn and we promise we'll go right back in the morning?" Cole proposed. Mrs. Tisdale sighed, clearly giving up.
"If you promised not to cause any trouble..."
"Or the house," Jasper said. "Maybe we could stay in the house, where it's warm and not creepy."
"Come on, Jasper," said Aaron, grabbing him by the arm.
Jasper went quietly, as though he'd already decided that even Mrs. Tisdale was not on his side. In the night air, the cars reminded Cole eerily of skeletal creatures, like dinosaur bones jutting out of the earth. Havoc padded behind them quietly. His pale eyes kept turning back toward the house and his tongue lolled as though he was hungry. The others seemed to feel the same sense of foreboding. Tamara looked around with a shiver and summoned up a small ball of fire. It danced along the path to the barn in front of them, lighting up scattered license plates, tires, and cans full of bolts. Cole was glad when they reached the barn, with its red-painted door secured by a huge metal bar. Up close, it was easy to see that the metal had been oiled recently. Aaron set to work, lifting aside the bar and sliding the door open. The old post-and-beam barn was a familiar place to Cole. It was where the good cars rested, each under oilskin tarps. It was where he and his dad had spent most of their time when they came down here. Cole would bring a stack of books or his Game Boy and sit up in the loft while his father tinkered below. They were good memories, but right then they felt as hollow as the skeletal landscape of cars outside.
"Upstairs," he said,
and started toward the ladder. He put his foot on the lower rung and almost collapsed as a jolt of pain shot up his leg. He bit down on the noise he wanted to make, but caught Aaron's sympathetic look anyway. He didn't glance over at Jasper, just reached to pull himself up with his hands, keeping the weight off his leg as much as he could. The others followed. It was dark in the hayloft, and Cole blinked around for a moment, blind until Tamara appeared with her ball of fire, dancing just over her head like a light bulb in a cartoon. The other two followed, spreading out in the narrow room. There wasn't much to it, a desk, a camp stove, and 2 narrow beds with blankets folded at the bottoms. Everything was incredibly neat. And if Mrs. Tisdale hadn't told them, Cole wouldn't have guessed that Alistair had been there recently at all. Jasper flopped down on one of the beds.
"Are we going to eat? You know, it's got to be breaking some law to take me captive and not feed me."
Tamara sighed, then looked over at Call hopefully.
There's a stove. Is there any food?
Yeah, some. Mostly canned stuff. Call reached under his dad's bed for the baskets he kept there. Cans of Chef Boyardee ravioli. Bottles of water. Beef jerky. A utility knife. Forks. And two large Hershey's bars. Call sat on one of the beds with Tamara while Jasper glared from the other one. Aaron efficiently opened several of the cans of ravioli and heated them over the camp stove, kindled with magic, while Tamara spread out a map of the surrounding area she'd found among Alistair's things and glared at it with her nose wrinkled up thoughtfully.
"Can you read that?"
Call asked, peering over her shoulder. He reached for the map.
"I think that's a road."
She swatted at his hand.
"It's not a road, it's a river."
"Actually, it's a highway," said Jasper.
"Give me that."
He held his hand out. Tamara hesitated.
"Where are you trying to go anyway?" Jasper asked.
"We were trying to get here," said Call.
"But now..."
"I don't know."
"Well, if your dad isn't here, he must have gone somewhere," said Aaron, bringing over the heated cans of ravioli.
They took them gingerly, wrapping cloth around their hands so as not to get burned. Call passed around forks, and they started to eat. Jasper made a face at the first bite, but then he started shoveling pasta into his mouth.
"Maybe we can get Mrs. Tisdale to tell us something," Call said,
but a cold feeling was settling into his stomach. Alistair was clearly on the run. But where would he go? He didn't have close friends that Call knew of, or any other secret hiding places. Aaron and Tamara were talking in low voices, and Jasper had gotten hold of the map and was staring at it. Call put aside his half-eaten can of ravioli and got to his feet, heading over to Alistair's desk. He jerked the main drawer open. As he'd expected, it was full of car keys. Single keys, mostly, attached to leather fobs that showed the make of the car. Volkswagens, Peugeots, Citroëns, Mini Coopers, even an Aston Martin. Most were covered in dust, but not the key to the Martin. Call lifted it out of the desk. The Martin was one of his dad's favorites, even though he hadn't gotten it to run yet. Surely he wouldn't have been working on it while he was here, on the run for his life, though. Maybe Alistair had been planning on driving the Martin? It was a kicky car to escape in, capable of handling sharp turns and maybe even outrunning mages. If so, Call thought it was possible that he'd gotten it to work. Sure, it would be illegal for one of them to drive it, but that was the least of his worries. He went to the ladder with a sigh and started the arduous process of going down it. At least, with the others still in the loft, he was free to take it slow and wince as much as he wanted.
"Call, where are you going?"
Tamara called to him.
"Can you send some light down?"
Call asked. She sighed.
"Why do I have to do it? You can make fire hover just as well as I can."
"You do it better," Call said in a way he hoped was persuasive. She looked annoyed but sent down a sphere of fire anyway, which hovered in the air like a chandelier, dropping embers occasionally. Call pulled the tarp off of the Aston Martin. The car was blue-green in color and trimmed out in gleaming chrome, with ivory leather seats that were only a little bit ripped. The floor pan looked in good shape, too. His dad said that was usually the first thing to succumb to rust. Call clambered into place in the driver's seat and slid the key into the ignition. He frowned. He'd really have to stretch to reach the gas or brake. Aaron could probably do it. He was taller. Call turned the key, but nothing happened. The old motor refused to rumble to life.
"What are you doing?"
Call jumped and almost banged his head on the roof of the car. He leaned out the open door and saw Aaron standing by the driver's side, looking curious.
"Looking around," Call said. I'm not sure for what exactly, but my dad was definitely poking around this car before he left.
Aaron leaned in and whistled.
This is a nice car. Does it start?
Cole shook his head.
Check the glove compartment, Aaron said. My foster dad always used to keep everything in his.
Cole reached over and flipped the compartment open. To his surprise, it was full of papers. Not just any papers, he realized, lifting them out. Letters. Alistair was one of the only adults Cole knew who carried on most of his correspondence via handwritten letters instead of email, so the letters didn't surprise him. What did surprise him was who they were from. He opened one and scanned to the bottom, to the signature there, a signature that made his stomach turn over. Master Joseph A. Walther.
What?
What is it? Aaron said, and Cole looked up at him. He must have had a shocked expression on his face, because Aaron stepped away from the car and yelled upstairs to the others. He found something! Cole found something!
No, I didn't.
Cole stumbled out of the car, the letters jammed under his arm. I didn't find anything. Aaron's green eyes were troubled.
Then what are those?
Just personal stuff, my dad's notes.
Cole?
It was Tamara, hanging over the edge of the hayloft. Cole could see Jasper behind her.
Your dad is a wanted criminal. He doesn't have personal stuff.
She's right, Aaron said, sounding sorry. Anything could be relevant.
Fine.
Cole wished he'd been cleverer. Wished he'd guessed his father's hiding spot instead of Aaron. Wished he didn't have to share these letters with the others.
But I'm reading them. Not anyone else.
He kept the letters jammed under his arm as he climbed back up the ladder, Aaron on his heels. Jasper had figured out how the hurricane lamps worked, and the hayloft was full of light. Cole sat down on one of the beds, and the rest of them clambered onto the other one. It was weird, seeing Master Joseph's handwriting like this. It was spiky and thin, and he signed every letter with his full name, complete with middle initial. There were nearly a dozen of them, dated over the last 3 months, and they were full of disturbing lines.
There's a way we can both have what we want. You want your son brought back from the dead, and we want Constantine Madden. You don't understand the full power of the Alkahest. We never saw eye to eye before, Alistair, but now you've lost so much. Imagine if Sarah could be returned to you. Imagine if everything you lost could be returned to you. Steal the Alkahest, bring it to us, and all of your suffering will be over.
None of it made any sense.
Alistair had been going to use the Alkahest to kill him, hadn't he? He'd wanted to destroy the enemy of death. Cole remembered the astonishment on his father's face as he'd struck the wall, remembered the feeling of overwhelming fury. What if he'd been wrong about Alistair? What if Alistair hadn't been lying when he said he wasn't going to kill Cole? But if Alistair wanted to get rid of him and get the soul of his real son back, that was just as bad. Maybe he didn't want to kill Cole outright, but sticking his soul back in Constantine Madden seemed a lot like dying.
What?
Tamara was leaning so far off the bed that she was nearly falling.
Cole, what does it say?
Nothing,
Cole said grimly, folding up the most incriminating note and sticking it in his pocket. It's a bunch of tips on how to grow begonias.
Liar,
said Jasper succinctly, snatching one of the letters off the bed. He started to read out loud, eyes growing wider.
Wait, these are really, really, really not about begonias.
It was horrible.
Tamara and Aaron clearly hadn't believed him, but the look of betrayal on both their faces was almost as awful as Jasper's smug gloating. Worse, they read everything, line after bizarre line. Though to Cole's relief, nothing in the letters referred directly to the fact that he possessed the soul of Constantine Madden.
Who knew what they would have thought if they'd gotten a hold of the letter in his pocket?
So he really has the Alkahest, and he's going to give it to the enemy?
Jasper looked frightened.
I thought you said he'd been wrongfully accused.
Look at this one, said Tamara. Alistair must have agreed because Master Joseph is writing about how he'll contact him and how they'll meet. It's supposed to take place 2 days from now.
We need to go back to the Magisterium, said Aaron. We have to tell someone.
Call, I believed you about your dad, but maybe you were wrong.
We can't risk the Alkahest falling into the hands of the enemy, said Tamara. It means Aaron could be killed. You see that, right, Call?
Call looked at the fire burning in the lamps. Had he completely misunderstood what was going on with his father? He'd assumed his dad was a good person on the side of the Magisterium and the Masters, on the side of stopping Constantine Madden, whatever the cost. But now it seemed like maybe his dad was actually a bad person on Master Joseph's side after all, and was willing to do whatever it took to get the soul of his kid back. Which was not the worst thing from a certain perspective. But if Alistair decided to join up with Master Joseph, was Call morally obligated to let him do it, or to stop him? Call's head hurt.
I don't want anything bad to happen to Aaron, Call said.
That was the one thing he was sure about. I never did. Aaron looked miserable.
Well, we're not going to get anywhere tonight, he said. It's late and we're all tired. Maybe if we sleep for a couple of hours, we can figure something out in the morning.
They looked at the two beds. Each was about big enough for one adult or two kids.
I call that one, said Jasper.
He pointed at Tamara and Call.
And I call Aaron, because you're creepy and you're a girl.
I can sleep on the floor, Aaron offered, looking at the expression on Tamara's face.
That doesn't help anyone but Jasper, said Tamara crossly, and got onto the leftmost bed.
It's fine, Call. We'll just sleep on top of the covers. Don't worry about it.
Call thought that maybe he should offer to sleep on the floor like Aaron had, but he didn't want to. His leg already hurt, and besides, he knew for a fact that there were sometimes rats hiding in the barn.
Okay, he said, climbing in gingerly beside her. It was weird. In the other bed, Jasper and Aaron were trying to share a single pillow. There was a muffled cry as someone was punched. Call pushed the pillow on his bed over to Tamara and laid his head down on his crooked arm. He closed his eyes, but sleep didn't come. It was uncomfortable trying to keep to one side of the bed, making sure that even his toes didn't stray over to Tamara's side. It didn't help that he kept seeing the words and the letters Master Joseph had written, painted, on the backs of his eyelids.
Call?
He opened his eyes. Tamara was looking at him from a few inches away, her eyes big and dark.
Why are you so important?
She whispered. He felt the warm gust of her breath on his cheek.
Important?
He echoed. Jasper had started to snore.
All those letters, she said, from Master Joseph. I thought they'd be about Aaron. He's the Makar. But they were all about you. Call is the most important thing.
I mean, I guess because he's my dad, Call said, floundering.
So, I'd be important to him. It didn't sound like that kind of important.
Tamara said softly.
Call, you know you can tell us anything, right?
Call wasn't sure how to answer her. He was still trying to decide when Havoc began to howl.
Chapter 11
Havoc, quiet, shh, Call said.
But the wolf kept on barking, shoving his snout into the gap between the barn doors and scratching the wood with his paws.
What do you see, boy? Aaron asked. Is there something out there?
Tamara took a step toward the wolf.
Maybe your dad came back.
Cole's heart gave a wild thump. He ran to the door that Havoc was nosing at and pulled it back, opening the barn to the cold air outside. Havoc darted past him. The night was quiet. The moon was a sliver in the sky. Cole had to squint to see his wolf dart across the trampled grass toward the lines of wrecked cars, looking humped and unnatural in the darkness.
What's that?
It was Jasper, his voice a scared whisper.
Pointing.
Aaron stepped forward. They were all crowding around Cole now, in front of the open barn door. Cole looked where Jasper was pointing. At first he saw nothing, then, staring harder, he caught sight of something slipping around the side of one of the cars. Tamara gasped.
The thing was rising, seeming to grow from moment to moment, swelling right before them.
It gleamed under the moon, a monster made of slick metal, dark and wet-looking, as if its surface were rubbed with oil. Its eyes were like two massive headlights, flashing in the darkness. And its mouth.
Cole goggled as its massive jaw unhinged, lined with rows of shark-like metal teeth, and then closed on the hood of an ancient Citroën.
The car made a horrible crunching sound. The creature threw its head back, swallowing. It bulged outward as the car disappeared into its vast maw. A moment later, the car was gone, and the creature seemed to grow more gigantic.
It's an elemental,
Tamara said nervously.
Metal. It must be drawing power from all those cars and junk.
We should get out of here before it notices us, Jasper said.
Coward, Cole chided. It's an elemental on the loose. Isn't dealing with it our job? Jasper threw his shoulders back and glared.
Look. That thing has nothing to do with us. We're supposed to defend people, but I don't want to die defending your dad's hoarding. He'll be better off without all these cars, if he's not executed for being in league with the enemy, which is a big if, and we'll be better off out of here.
Shut up, Aaron said. Just shut up. His hand rose from his side. The metal on his wristband glowed. Cole could see what looked like a shadow starting to rise from his palm, half enveloping his hand.
Stop!
Tamara grabbed Aaron's wrist.
You haven't been taught to use the void properly, and the elemental's too big. Think of the size of the hole you'd have to open to get rid of it.
Now Aaron looked angry.
Tamara!
Guys?
Jasper interrupted.
I get that you're arguing, but I think it just noticed us.
Jasper was right. The headlight eyes were gleaming in their direction. Tamara let go of Aaron as the creature began to move. Then, unexpectedly, she whirled on Cole.
What are we supposed to do?
She demanded. Cole was too surprised to be asked for instructions to answer, which was fine, because Aaron was already talking.
We have to get to Mrs. Tisdale and protect her. If that thing has just stumbled on this place, then maybe it will eat some cars and go in peace, but if it doesn't, we have to be ready.
Metal elementals are rare, Jasper said, grabbing up Tamara's pack.
I don't know a lot about them, but I know they don't like fire. If it starts coming for us, I'll throw up a fire screen, okay?
I can do that, Tamara snapped.
It doesn't matter who does it, Aaron said, exasperated. Now come on!
They all started to run toward the farmhouse, Cole lagging slightly behind, not just because his leg was hurting, but also because he was worried about Havoc. He wanted to call out to him, make sure his wolf was safe, but he was worried it would call the elemental's attention, and he wasn't sure he could outrun it if it came to that. Already, Tamara, Aaron, and Jasper were outpacing him. The creature was still moving, sometimes half-hidden by cars, sometimes horribly clear. It wasn't moving fast, more like a cat stalking its prey. Slowly, it came.
growing with each mouthful of metal it took. As Cole got closer to Mrs. Tisdale's house, he realized that something was wrong. Light was spilling out of the farmhouse, not just from the windows, but also from the whole front, the door and part